C8 1015.
Security, can you have this man removed?
Yeah.
And roughed up.
Well, they're probably still registering. That's probably where they're going to start.
Okay, good morning, everybody. And welcome to the workshop. First of all, I'd like to welcome you to our Cocaine Anonymous Area 18th Annual Convention. You will be amazed. And, yeah. I hope you guys are having a good time. I would like to begin this meeting to extend a moment of silence to those as you choose, followed by... God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Out of respect for those attending, would you please silence all cell phones and pagers? Like I said, good morning, everyone. My name is Manny, and I'm an alcoholic and an addict.
Hi, Manny.
And thank you guys for coming this morning. Our workshop is at the practice the principles in all our affairs. And we'd like to thank the committee for allowing us to share with you this morning about these principles. I'd like to introduce this panel that we have here today. Again, my name is Manny. I'm an alcoholic and an addict. And
Manny.
I'm sure they'll agree with me that this is a fine bunch of sick people that we have here to talk to you today. So, again, my name is Manny, and I'm an alcoholic and addict.
Hi, Manny.
My name is Ryan. I'm an alcoholic and addict.
Hi, Ryan. Good morning, everybody. I'm Todd. I'm an addict alcoholic.
My name is Dan. Alcoholic addict.
Hi, Dan.
My name is Antonio. I'm an alcoholic addict.
Hey, Antonio.
My name's Paul. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Paul.
Okay, then I've asked Ryan to read the 12 traditions. The 12 traditions are to the group what the steps are to the individual.
Once again, my name is Ryan. I'm an addict alcoholic.
Hi, Ryan.
Hi, Ryan.
The 12 traditions. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon CA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants, they do not govern. 3, the only requirement for CA membership is a desire to stop using cocaine and all other mind-altering substances. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or CA as a whole. Group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the addict who still suffers. 6, a CA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the CA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every CA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Cocaine Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, CA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Cocaine Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the CA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, television, and films. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all of our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Thanks, Ryan. Our workshop is about principles, and I'd like to welcome anybody new here, newcomers here, out-of-towners here, and who might be asking, what are the principles that we're talking about? The principles come from the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we use those 12 steps, which come from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the 12 steps are vital to recovery. You know, we have fellowship here, and then we have this program here. And I'd just like to read something before we start. It says, let's be clear, this is not a meeting of Cocaine Anonymous. The opinions expressed in this workshop are those of the speakers and not necessarily represent of Cocaine Anonymous as a whole. Whew. Yeah, so... but like I had said, we use these 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous to help us get out of that hopeless state of mind that we were in, and body. Many of us have tried to do this alone, and we just could not do it. And we walk into this fellowship, and we go through these 12 steps. And I know from my own personal experience, I needed these 12 steps to change my own ideas, my own emotions, my own fears. And I'd be lost. I'd be lost without these 12 steps. And along the way, we learn principles. And we've passed out a sheet which correspond pretty much to each step. What we're going to do is talk about 5 to 10 minutes on our experience with these principles, and then allow you to ask us any questions. So with that, I'm going to give you our first speaker, who's going to be Ryan.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Manny.
Thank you, Manny.
Thanks, man. My name is Ryan. I'm an alcoholic and addict.
Hey, Ryan.
So principles in all our affairs. I don't know about you guys, but for me, I didn't really live by any principles before I came into a program. I worked all these principles only for me. Like everything had to do with what I wanted, when I wanted to get it, and you know, it didn't matter who I hurt or what I did. And today, being sober and after working the 12 steps, practicing these principles in all of my affairs, it doesn't mean that I just come into a meeting or whenever I'm, you know, around recovery is when I turn these principles on in my life. It has a lot to do with, for me, the service part, not only doing service within the program, but being there for my family and friends who I was not there for when I was out using and using them to get what I wanted. A perfect example being my grandparents were a huge part of my life, and they took me in when I had to move out of my mom's house. And when I was out there, I know that I took advantage of them, and the only reason I would do things for them is if I could get something out of them. And now, while I'm in this program, I have a sense of gratitude for what they've done for me, and I'm being there, no matter what it is, I'm there for my grandmother. She's just done so much for me, and I don't know about you guys, but coming to this program and how beat down I was and how, ashamed and guilty I had felt for the things I had done, now being able to be of service to my family members, be that grandson I never was, be that brother I never was, be that son, and it has a lot to do with being of service to them, because when I'm being of service, and I know when I came into this program, people always said, be of service, and I'm one of those people that can listen and kind of understand what you're saying, be of service, but until I do it, I don't actually understand what it truly means to be of service to somebody and be out of yourself. So I find it most beneficial when I'm being of service to my family, friends, even in the program. It doesn't have to be these great things, but as long as I'm, this morning my grandma calls me and tells me that her TV is out. Well, I go over there, I help her with her TV. All I have to do is, just little things like that. It just gets you out of yourself. It gets me out of myself, and it helps me, And in this worksheet that they sent out, there's all these, principles, and one of the ones that I've come to work on a lot is faith. I lived with a lot of fear, insecurity, and all that, and I didn't have a sort of higher power or anything in my life. And working these 12 steps, getting in touch with a higher power and having faith that things were supposed to, it's all great and good. The truth is I had to, before really faith thing, because I kept trying to control things around me or get mad or upset when things wouldn't go my way, whether it be at work when someone's getting another promotion and I thought I should get it. And so for that, you know, for the rest of the day, the person who got the promotion questions about work, I kind of went to my, well, you got the promotion, you should know this. And, you know, being in this program, to take it and know that it's wrong, when before there was no inventory even close to being taken. And it's just, you know, and then the next day I had made amends to him and answered his questions and things like that. And, you know, and a few months later I had gotten a promotion too. And that's with only faith, you know, because before I probably would have left that place and said, you know, forget these guys. They don't value me enough. I'm more important than they may think. And instead of that, you know, I had a little humility. I realized that I wasn't, you know, the great worker that I may have thought that I was, like the, you know, the star, the varsity football player was like the star, you know. And having humility, walking through life knowing that I'm not the center of attention, you know. There's all these people out here, okay. I'm no more special than anybody in here. And I don't know, this program has done a lot for me. Has given me a purpose. I'm living with a purpose now instead of purpose being, you know, getting my fix or, you know what I mean? And I couldn't be more grateful for CA and this fellowship and these guys up here, all of you. Yeah, I don't know how long I've been talking, but that's pretty much all I got. I hope I made any kind of sense to somebody. And so, with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Ryan.
Thank you.
Do we have any questions for Ryan? Okay, let's go to our next speaker, Todd.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Todd. I'm an addict alcoholic.
Hey, Todd.
Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to practice these principles in all of our affairs. And I didn't do a whole lot of studying on this. I just kind of shoot from the hip sometimes, straight from the heart. And the little bit that I did look at it, I remember that after the 12-step is read, it says, what an order, I can't go through with it. Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. And I'm saying, yep, that's me. Nothing perfection here. And but that's okay. You know what I mean? And because if it did tell me I had to be perfect with this, I would fall short every day. But as far as the principles goes, Ryan touched on a little bit. I have kind of like a before, during, and an after with my principles. Before, my alcoholism addiction was running rampant during that period of time, and then after, which would be obviously when I came to recovery and what I've learned since that time. So the principles before were principles that I learned either directly from my parents or from witnessing how other people lived their lives when I was a young child. And I came from a relatively normal childhood. Relatively, it wasn't perfectly normal. But I learned a lot of principles as a child and what I would consider to be good ones, you know. Respect your elders, respect your parents, work hard, go to school. You know, and along those lines. During my using period of time, which was probably late teens, so I got here when I was 38, those principles gradually deteriorated and at the end were non-existent. As everybody here probably knows, our addictions are progressive, and towards the end there, I had none left. I was basically running on self-will when riot, as it talks about in the big book, and my whole life was surrounded about getting money to get drugs, and then getting more money to get more drugs, and in and out of jails. And so by the time I got here, I probably still had some principles deep down inside of me, but I certainly did not have them on the surface, and didn't have any idea how to live. Now, the principles are part of the design for a living. And having had a spiritual awakening as a result of working the steps, now I have to go out into the real world and practice these principles in all my affairs that are taught. And my experience in that area was first to make an amends to the people that I was that were close to me, and learn how to rebuild those relationships one day at a time. And that's what I did. For example, this is kind of a funny story. Obviously, the people that are closest to us get affected the most. And my parents are both alive, and they're in their early 70s, and obviously we have a generation gap, and I don't always agree with what they say. But at this point in my life, I respect them enough to let them be that way. And I not that I bite my tongue, but I respect them, and they deserve my respect, and I don't try to fix them or change them and all that. My dad, a couple years ago, had this plan. He was going to do some landscaping at his house. And he rented a sod cutter, and he needed my help because I got a pickup truck, so I had to go to it. And I disagreed with his landscaping process, okay? So I wasn't up for having to run the Menards or whatever the hell it was on Saturday morning. And he had my brother's two sons come over. I think the whole idea was to get the grandkids exposed to working hard, you know what I mean? So, and what he's going to do, he's going to cut, he rents a sod cutter because he's going to be cutting the grass out of here, and he wants to save the sod. Well, my opinion is you just throw it in the garbage and buy a couple of rolls of sod when you're done. Well, if anybody knows anything about a sod cutter, you can set the depth of the sod that you cut. Well, he sets it at like 2.5 inches. And he's burrowing down with his machine, and he's going along it. And you could not pick up an 18-inch by 18-inch square of sod because it weighed about 150 pounds. And the whole time I'm just biting my tongue, and I want to say, Dad, get the hell out of the way. Let me run the sod cutter at an inch, and we're going to get this thing done. But out of respect for him and practicing these principles in all my affairs, I didn't do that. And you know what? I got to be honest with you. It was hard for me. I wanted to get the hell out of there. I'm thinking, why are we wasting our time cutting sod, blah, blah, blah. And the program teaches me to live in a way where I can accept what he was doing for who he is and what his thinking is, and just be okay with it. And I had learned a lesson. And like I say, it wasn't easy for me. My relationship with my parents today is above and beyond my wildest dreams. I have a 24-year-old daughter. I have a grandson that's going to be 2 in March. And those relationships were non-existent when I got here. And it's by practicing these principles daily and when I'm in the presence of these people that I'm able to rebuild those relationships. Since coming in recovery, I think it's about 3-4 years ago, I got a promotion at work. And basically became a superintendent. And at first it was difficult to try to balance between being a boss and being a person with integrity and not being an asshole and yelling at people. Because, you know, there's different ways of managing people. But for me, it was challenging to be able to try to have these principles in my affairs at work and still get people to be productive. And it was challenging for me. And I think I've done a good job. I'm still a superintendent, so I did something right. And nobody quit. And honest with, and I'm really, I try to be fair with the guys. You know, basically I just tell them, like, if you do your job, you know, I don't want to have to babysit you. I don't want to have to try to tell you how you should perform at work. And most people generally listen to that. And it's been a very cool experience to be able to do that. Speaking of work, now it's practicing principles at work is probably my most difficult place because I don't always agree with other people in management, and you know I can sit there and criticize and say if that guy was doing his job right, this would go smoother over here. And I had to let a lot of that go because I can really walk away from the principles very easily. So basically what it's like today, I haven't perfected them, but it's a design for living, and those are the principles that I try to base my daily living on, and I still have work to do, but I would like to think that I'm a lot better at it today than I was when I first got here, or even prior to my addiction running rampant. So I thank everybody for coming, and that's all I have. I'm going to pass.
Thanks.
Do you have any questions for Todd?
I don't know.
Okay, our next speaker, Dan.
Hi, Dan.
Hey, guys. Dan Elcock.
Good morning, Dan.
First of all, I'd like to thank the Waukesha County Sheriff's Department for allowing me to be here today. No, it's good to see you guys. You know, if you've got one of these sheets, these are the 12 principles, and I didn't know what these were. I didn't when I came in. I seriously did not understand that I had to change as a human being, because I was good, man. I was set. I was a full-blown crack addict, but I was good. So if you guys can help me stop using, I'll be on my way and go back to my wonderful life that I had carved out for myself. Jails, institutions, and near death. But, you know, and I'm going to just speak from the heart, too. There's one principle that I really need to talk on, but I am not in this room without you guys. There's no chance. I have no chance of staying sober. Manny said something really important, that I tried to do this alone. And I tried to do this alone. And I didn't just try once. I tried like most of us. I tried a lot of times. Because I didn't want to admit defeat. I was told a long time ago that I've always been sort of a fighter, sort of a stubborn guy, just like so many of us, you know. You know, I really thought I was different when I came in. Oh, wait till these people hear this story. This is a doozy. These people have never heard wreckage like this. And then I come in here, I'm like, wow, I'm not that bad. These people are really Listen to this guy talk. Shows me a picture of what he looked like when he came in. Holy cow, dude. Better get it together, punk.
This is true.
No. No, he's doing great. Antonio's doing great. You know, and it's so cool to see people change in this program when they actually start doing it. I definitely was one of those guys that hung out. I met so many cool people in these rooms, and I was like, ah, these people are awesome. Let's go out to dinner. Ah, la, la. How about working a program, man? You know, and I couldn't change until I actually started doing this. And what a cool thing. What a really cool thing. I found sobriety when I began to work the steps. I didn't find any sobriety when I hung out, because I would leave, and then I'd come back, and then I'd leave again, and I'd leave for 1, 2, 3 months and swear off any recovery, and then cry and get my ass back here, because I couldn't find sobriety anywhere else. This program works, and everyone in this room is a testament to that. Who am I to think that the millions of people that have come before me could get sober when they worked this program, and I was different, and I wasn't going to get it. You know, when you get into that mindset of a hopeless state of mind and body, the way Todd was explaining, there's so much mental anguish that goes along with, never mind the physical and all the consequences that go along with our disease. That stuff can all be dealt with once we get sober. It's that emotional bottom that gets hit. That without question is the most difficult thing to overcome. I mean, I had so many bottoms after bottom, and consequence after consequence, and I kept moving on. I kept, man, screw these people. But the disease had me. It had me full force. And it had pulled me down in a hole. And that's the bottom line. And when I needed to get out of that hole, I reached up. And the people in these rooms pulled me out. And that's the way it works. That's the only way it can work. And once that obsession to want to mess myself up on a daily basis through alcohol and drugs was lifted, and it got lifted in these rooms, I could begin to work on the real deal, the real problem, which is up here. But I couldn't do it until I could get that obsession lifted, man. Because I couldn't focus, I couldn't concentrate. My whole life, and I know you guys understand this, revolved around, I gotta go, man. I gotta get out of here, and I gotta mess myself up. Because I can't take this life. Can't handle it. And the worst part about it is my disease said I could. My disease said I could handle this life. And, you know, you get in that position where it's just like, screw it, man. I'm going to succumb to this disease. I'm going to be one of those statistics that doesn't make it. But it doesn't have to be that way. It does not have to be that way. And what a gift. What a gift. And I'm just going to touch real quickly on one principle, and that's perseverance. I was told so many times, Dan, you got to keep coming back. Give it a year. Stay sober. Try to get sober a year. And if you don't like where you're at after a year of sobriety, the streets are out there. Well, guess what? This really cool dude that was in Genesis, I'll never forget this, came up to me and we were talking. We were at Positive Action at St. Catherine's. And we were talking about the bottom, you know, the bottom feeder junkies and addicts. And in the end, I was a bottom feeder. There's no question. But we talked about it. We said, man, he told me, he said, Dan, the streets are undefeated. They're undefeated. You will not defeat addiction on the street. And I thought about that. And that was like 5 years ago he told me that. I think about that guy a lot because that hit me hard. I've heard so many incredible things in these rooms, little one-line phrases that have changed my life. And I forget everything, but I don't forget those little one-liners like the streets are undefeated. In other words, give up the fight, man. Dan, give it up. Dude, who do you think you are? I was told a long time ago to surrender to this disease, and it took me some time to finally do it. And I owe that to you people, and I owe that to perseverance. You know, I got just enough hope from you guys to keep coming back here and make a phone call. I called this is going to be emotional. I called this guy after not talking to anybody for a long time. And I cried. And he answered. And I said, Todd, I can't do it anymore. I said, this thing's got me, man. I can't do it. I need help. And he was there. And he took me to a meeting on a Sunday night. He said, we're going to do this thing. But I came back, you know. And what'd you call me? Still got some fight in me. But I came back, and you guys were here, and I want to thank you for it. And I'm gonna pass with that.
Thanks, Dan. Thank you.
We have any questions for the crybaby?
I'm done crying outside.
Next speaker, Antonio.
Good morning, everyone. I'm an addict alcoholic named Antonio. I'm going to send around that picture like that.
Oh,
just to show you that this program works. Hope you guys don't mind.
You do.
It's rough. I will warn you, it's rough. I'm a lot better now, but let me think, where do I begin? When it comes to principles, I didn't have any, just like the rest of us. I had to learn trial and error, basically everything in my life. When it came to sobriety, I didn't know about that. I mean, it was just a way of life for me. I grew up in a drug culture. That was just the way it was. I didn't know anything else. These principles, there's a few that stick out to me today that I want to elaborate on. I like to kind of relate by telling a story. So I'm looking at integrity. It says, if we have truly done a thorough job of introspection and evaluation of our assets and shortcomings, do we have the integrity to own up to it? It can be very difficult to be open and honest about our past behaviors. We begin to learn to do the right thing, even though no one is watching. That last phrase sticks out to me, so I'm going to touch on that. But to be open and honest about my past is so damn hard. I spent a couple months on step four, just going to that, and then moving on to step five, to admit to God and to myself and another human being the exact nature of my wrongs, and to let that out and open to think about how disgusted I was with myself, and to tell someone else that and admit it to God, that was so hard for me to do. I mean, I was kicking myself in the butt the whole time. But I realized, like someone told me, that that's what was keeping me sick. And if I wanted the medicine to get better, that I needed to do that. And once I did it, it felt like a ton of bricks had been lifting off my shoulders. It was so relieving. It felt so good. So I'm happy to share that. On another note, when it comes to doing the right thing when no one is watching, I'll tell you for something. But this morning, you know, I was on my way here, actually, and my significant other does not allow shoes on the wood floor or through the house and stuff. And on my way out the door, I had my shoes, jacket on, everything, and I was ready to leave. And I left my phone on the couch. And she was in there laying on the couch. And I was going to creep in, whoop my shoes on, because I didn't want to untie them and take them off and all that. I was going to creep in. I said, now, wait a minute. I said, out of respect, you need to take these shoes off and walk across, you know, the wood floor. Don't scratch anything up, because she'll probably notice a footprint or something. And I said, you know, just don't do it. Don't do it, you know. And I didn't do it. I took off my shoes. Untie it. And then, you know, pull the shoe off and the sock is stuck in there, so I gotta re-put that on. You know how that goes. But after I did it, you know, I'm walking around the house barefooted now, but I said to myself on the way out, I said, now that's respect. That's integrity. That's doing the right thing when no one was watching. I speak from the heart and I take pride in that today. I was honored when I was asked to come and speak for you guys and share some of my story and some of myself with you, in hopes that I might reach out to the newcomer or whoever and help someone else's program. Which this is a good segue for me to go on into the next principle that I can relate to this morning, which is brotherly love. Mm. It says, while we were preparing a list of those to whom we owe amends, it becomes time for the golden rule. It is important to begin treating others as we wish to be treated. We must also learn not to judge others, but accept them for who they are and not our vision of who they should be. I had a serious problem with that. I mean, I was like, I wanted to be the puppeteer, the puppet master. I wanted everything to fit into my pocket. I wanted to control the outcome and how everything went. I wanted control. If you did this, the outcome was going to be this way, and I just liked it. And like I said, I wanted everything to work my way, but I realized I can't think like that. That is so unrealistic. And instead, I started investing my time into others, into caring for others. You know, it takes effort, it takes energy to look at the person next to you and see what might they need in their daily affairs that you can help with to help them with their program of recovery, you know, or make them feel better. You know, this guy, he might need a hug. Where this guy, he needs something definitely a headlock.
Look at that, bro.
And it's not a me program, it's a we program. And so I got to extend that to my brothers and sisters in order for me to stay sober. You know, it's so important. Humility. Here we move further into action. We have seen in step five where we have been selfish and self-centered. We practice being humble and realize that we are not the center of the universe. We are all simply small parts of a huge whole. To be human is to make mistakes.
Hopefully, our journey has led us to the point where we can readily admit mistakes and accept ourselves for being imperfect. We are asking for help in forgiving ourselves. Sometimes that's so hard for me to do. To forgive myself, you know, because I'm beating myself up over the money I stole or the victims I've made out there or, you know, some of the bad things I did. And sometimes it's hard to get past that guilt. But someone, a wise person once said that guilt is interest on a debt that you do not owe. So I'm not carrying that around with me. I've already paid the consequences. You know, I've already lived through it. And I gotta think about survival for tomorrow. Well, I mean, we live 24 hours at a time, but I really gotta focus on now and how that guilt could draw me back to a negative lifestyle, and I don't want that. Simply put, to me, humility is the honest pursuit of one's true self. And I ask myself, is what I'm doing, is that the real me? And as I was reading this, I seemed selfish, self-centered, me. And a lot of people have told me that. And I just remember early on in life, I come from a family. I got 7 brothers, 1 sister. In total, I was raised with, there was 5 of us in the household. Even when I lived with family, there was 8 of us. And I was taught, don't hide it, divide it. You know, my mother's philosophy was, if I can't do for all, I don't just do for one. And so there was no selfishness, and I wasn't raised that way. So that must have been some character defect that I developed myself. So that had to be worked out. And only through me seeking it out would I find it. The program, we're small parts of a huge whole. Looking at the big picture, that's often, how can I affect this big picture in a positive way? And that's humility to me. That's truly what's within myself. Next thing. Spiritual awareness, step 11. I haven't made it that far. By the way, I'm not halfway through the program, step 6. Been clean 117 days, something to that effect. And I'm surely amazed. The promises are real. I know because I live them. They're materializing in my life. So on the spiritual awareness, step 11 suggests that we continue to improve our conscious contact with our higher power. So we tap into that power through prayer and meditation. We become cognizant of the blessings we are receiving in our new life. We are learning to notice His handiwork in all aspects of our lives. Spiritual awareness has been a big thing for me. It's been key in my recovery. I've never really been a religious person, but I've always been spiritual. When I got in contact with my spirituality, it helped me in a lot of ways that I hadn't imagined. I mean, when I come to know peace and serenity in my life, when I found those things, when I could sit at home alone and study and prepare for school or watch a movie and be by myself and just appreciate tranquility, things that I didn't know when I was in active addiction, you know, because I like ruckus, I like chaos, I like drama, you know. One of the lines that I'm famous for in the meetings is I said, don't let the haircut fool you. This is before when I wear my hair nice and parted and come off as a neat, respectable guy, but I had an ugly side. And I'm not proud of it to admit that, but I'm glad where I'm at right now. I'm glad that I made the change. And after I lost all that negativity, coming to know my new freedom through the promises, I appreciated like nothing that I ever appreciated in my life. And now I'm not willing to let anything come in between that peace in myself. That's how bad I want it, and that's how much I appreciate it, because I see the potential to grow is there, to lead a happy, healthy lifestyle. I mean, that's priceless. Someone told me I'm messing with their peace, I gotta back up. I got to remove myself from that situation. Meditation has helped me a lot to stay calm. I do this little thing this LDA counselor told me. A mudra is what it is. It's from the Eastern philosophy where you just meditate. You know, it's concentrating our energy and relaxing. And we need that. From being high strung all the damn time, I'm 32 years old. I shouldn't be that high strung. You know, hypertension kicking all the time, walking around wound up with a chip on your shoulder and stuff like that. I'm so relieved and happy to be just mellow. And I know what fluidity feels like again, you know, to move unconstrained, you know, to have that feeling in my body, in my spirit, just to kind of, it says be in contact with our higher power. I appreciate that today. With that, I pass. Thank you.
Have any questions for Antonio? Okay, and our last speaker, Paul.
Hi, my name's Paul.
Hey, Paul.
When I was told I was going to speak about the principles, I thought that was a good idea because I knew all my principles by his name, pretty much. You know, being in and out of his office, their offices all the time. And I noticed the spelling was a little different, so I had to change up. I'm going to talk a lot about faith, and I'm going to talk about the full circle I did with faith. My first 3 years of school, kindergarten, first, and second grade, I went to Christian school. And so I had a lot of faith. You know, I knew all the songs, prayers, and everything. And then around third grade, my parents said, you know, if you want to go to, you know, the public school, it's your choice. And it was about a half a block from my house. I could see it from my front yard. All my friends were there. So I went to public school. And, you know, there wasn't that same faith in public school. It's a lot of crap. So I think that's where I started straying away, and I strayed away from God. So I'm around 10 years old, and I've always been into sports, and I get into Little League, and I get really good. And by the time I'm 12, you know, I'm making the All-Stars and stuff, but I go to play the tournaments, and I'm not getting too much playing time. And I'm like, oh, they got something against me, you know, I can't believe this. Time goes on, I'm like, now I'm 15, and I'm thinking, here I am, I'm on the All-Stars again, I'm playing half a game in right field, and I'm a pitcher and a shortstop. You know, what do these guys got against me? And I didn't realize it was because, you know, I'm cussing at the umpires. You know, my parents are actually standing up in the stands saying, shut up and play the game, and hey, mind your own business, man, I'm trying to pitch here. He made a bad call, you know. And it got worse, you know, and then then punk rock came around. And I was like, oh, I like this stuff, man. This dude's a caller. There's no rules. It's anarchy. That's what I'm all about. Talk about no principles. I had no principles at that point. And it got worse and worse. And I started coming up with my own principles, like, oh, if I can think it, I can say it. And I practiced that principle a lot. Talk about honesty. I was very honest about you. I would tell you all the honest things about you, the way you looked, you know, where you acted, and I loved it. And it got worse, and it got worse. And I started drinking, and smoking pot, and, you know, I'd do lines. You know, in my youth, I probably did every drug that there was at one time or another. And so, by that time, I lost all faith. And this is really hard for me to say, because I actually have this other saying. I got so rebellious. Now, listen to this. This is hardcore. I used to say, I wish there was a God so I could hate him. That's how bad I got. I was walking around with a chip on my shoulder. So I had this girlfriend, and you know, she was really cool. And I was drinking a lot. I never hit her, but I beat up her parents' car one time, you know, all drunk. And she told me, she came to me and she said, you know what, you gotta get some help. So I went and I went into treatment. This is my early 20s. I went into treatment because of that, because she asked me to. And I went into treatment for 30 days, and I came out, and I was cool, man. I was cool. I didn't drink. I didn't take one drink of alcohol for the next 20 years. but I didn't practice any principles. I didn't practice any morals. I ended up being sober. I ended up spending a year in prison because in California there's some law that if you beat somebody up and they're unconscious and you keep hitting them, you're going to prison.
What a law.
So, yeah, so I ended up in prison. Now, mind you, this is after I quit drinking. So the next 20 years, I got married. I was with my wife for 17 years. Didn't drink one time the whole time when I was with her. I smoked pot, you know, did some lines here and there. I think I snore heroin. But I ended up getting divorced without using, smoking some pot. And basically almost not using. I never said I was sober, but I wasn't drinking. That was my thing. And, you know, it just goes to show you, like I tell people, I go, you know, these principles, these steps, if you're not using, when you practice these steps, you're going to be a better person. That's not just for the addict, it's for everybody. And, you know, I never really cared about helping people or anything. I could give a rat's ass about everybody else, you know, as long as I was cool. It was about me being happy. I thought I was happy, but I never was happy. So then I started getting, you know, I started trying to go to church. And I met this guy from Salvation Army, after I moved out here. And I'll tell you a little bit about humility. I was going to one meeting a week on my own. And I was going to church with this guy. And my whole program at that point was, I'm never going to drink before a meeting. And I didn't. I never drank before a meeting. And I wasn't going to drink and go to church. And I didn't do that. So one time I did. And I started drinking and I went to church. And I decided I'm going to get baptized. Yeah. And I'm like 40 years old. I'm going to get baptized. So, I go in, I change into my gown and everything, and there was a big, it was like, kind of like this set here, and the baptism pool was here, it was plexiglass going across, and then you step down like this, and there were people taking pictures, and everyone's clapping, yeah, all right, he's making the move and everything, and they tell me, you know, watch your step, and I'm like, whatever, man, I go down, I hit the first step, my feet slide off from under me. I hit the water. The force of the water pushes my gown up. Oh. And I didn't want to have wet underwear, so I wasn't wearing anything underneath the gown. So we got the plexiglass. The plexiglass in here. Photographer snapped. And I'm like, the first thing I could think of doing was standing up and saying, this water's really cold. So that was my baptism experience. So then I came out to Milwaukee and I started getting to the point where I really knew I needed help because I was staying at the mission for a few days, the old rescue mission. And I tell you what, that was some of the worst few days of my life. I was getting in fights with guys there. Got money stolen from me there. It was terrible. And so I went into treatment. I was in there for a couple of months. And I got out, went into transitional living for 3 months. And I got released from transitional living. And I had nowhere to go for a while. And I said, you know, I'm not going back to the mission. I go, I can do better. I can stay sober on my own better than going back to that place. But that was just, and I did. I was out on the streets for 3 days, and that's when I really first found my faith. Something told me, I told God I was on my knees, and I'm tearing up and everything. I was like, God, you know, I'm giving it to you. Take care of me. And I didn't fight anymore, you know. I just said, God, take care of me. And I was on the streets for 3 days, just wandering around, doing news. And lo and behold, 3 years later, I got into another program and I had a place to stay. That's when I really found my faith and I really started trusting in God. And it was good for me. I mean, I wouldn't take that back. That's when I really, 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 really started getting this. And, you know, as far as helping people, you know, I start doing service work, you know, help set up for meetings, do all that kind of stuff. Just the other day, it was odd because there were some guys from Genesis where I went to treatment, and they were in there, and they were asking, you know, there's guys that are using hair. There's guys that are in my face like this, you know, and what do I do? And there, most of my life, I had said, well, first, get them to share with you. You know, they're talking about not snitching. You know, I grew up, you don't snitch. You handle shit, whatever way you got to handle it. Here's something amazing. I tell these guys, well, you know, you got to think about your own sobriety, your own well-being. I mean, if they're messing with your sobriety, you have to say something to somebody. He's like, what about this guy? He's in my face, man. And you know, back in the day, I would have been like, you gotta mess this guy up. You got. Don't wait for him to take the first shot. You gotta mess him up, hurt him, show him who's boss. And I told this guy, you know, it's easy to fight. The hard part, you know, the manly thing, it's really hard to do, is to just walk away. And that's what I've learned to do. I used to embrace fight. I used to love fight. I did it for fun. And I haven't been in a fight in a long time. And I never thought I'd get joy out of helping people. It's cool when people come up to me and ask for advice or, you know, say, what would you do? And I can say, I could not say I would kick their ass. I would, you know, do this and that. I tell them, man, you know, just chill out. Talk to God. God's going to help you out. So, and it's given me peace that I've never had in my life. Longest time. And people here, people on this panel, people that aren't here, man, they're really good to me. These are some of the best friends I've ever had. You know, some of the most unconditional friends I've ever had in this program. That'll pass.
Thanks. Thanks.
Do we have any questions for Paul or anybody on the panel?
No, just thank you so much, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Paul, we got a question back there.
My question is, one of your sponsors, do they do, like, there are two types of sponsors, I think. One is dual boss, like the GCR vice presidents, and the other one does, like, the service board.
My sponsor doesn't do anything. I hate him.
Oh,
I hate him.
He does what I tell him.
What was the question?
I don't know. What was the question? Yeah. I guess.
Can you repeat that?
I mean, I was, told that there's like two types of sponsors. Like one is does the the service work for like the vice president, GC, and GCR. And the other one does, like, business to hospitals and jails.
Right.
I think he's talking about on the panel, like at meetings, the GSR and the HR. Oh,
right.
I think that's what he's talking about.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Todd.
I would like to hope that my sponsor is doing service work. He's over here too. there really is one type of sponsor. Hopefully it's somebody that's been cleaning sober for a period of time and will help you work through the steps and get connected with people in the program. And generally, my sponsor, one of the reasons I chose him is because he was involved in the program doing the type of service work you're talking about. But they don't necessarily have to be a GSR. That's a group service representative. But they may have been at one time. But obviously, a sponsor that's involved in service work would probably be a good sponsor.
You know, my sponsor does, when I go to him with a problem, he gives me advice on, go ahead and do that and see what I get you. And you know what? I used to, at first, I wanted to smack him for saying that. And then when I started thinking about it, it's a really good point. If you want to find out, go ahead and give it a shot and see what I get you. Or take the advice and not do it. That's even better.
Yeah, and actually, if you'd like to talk to one of us after the meeting, we can let you know exactly what a sponsor is, where you can find one, and that kind of stuff.
Okay.
Right. Okay, cool. No. All right, thank you.
Any other questions? I'd just like to share a little bit what these guys were all talking about. That on the 12 of 12, it says that step 12 is the joy of living. And that's the theme of step 12. And we find out when we practice these principles that we find some joy in our life because we're sharing and we're helping people, you know. And there's just one, I've been around a little bit, and one thing I've been seeing out there is meetings that I've been going to in CA, some of them, that there's just some of these meetings where we're not sponsoring guys, you know. And I don't know if it's because of lack of not going through the steps or if it's not getting off our butts. I used to wait for a guy to ask me, you know. That's how big my ego was, you know. If you want what I have, you're going to ask me. And I find it a lot more rewarding for me to see somebody come in and go and approach that guy and ask them if they're looking for a sponsor. And I couldn't do that before because I didn't work these steps, you know. And we've got people, and I know I would be, the same thing would happen to me, that that they don't give these 12 steps a chance, and we end up picking up, you know. And just something out of the book that says, practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from using as intense work with other addicts. It works when all other activities fail. You can help when no one else can help. You can secure their confidence when others fail. You know, and I see that so much, you know, and I get that only because I've given these 12 steps a chance and I've learned to adopt some of these principles and use some of these principles. Then hanging around with a crew of guys like this or anybody in the fellowship, they're the ones that keep me doing this stuff. If I did this, try to do this myself, you know, I'd lie and this and that, you know, whatever. But hanging out with these guys, this fellowship, keeps these principles in me, and we share them. We laugh about them, as you can see, and it's just all a great fellowship. And I think that little one back there wants me to wrap this up. So, she's sharing. So I'm just going to go with the readout we have here. That we are all here to help. And after this moment of silence and meditation for the addict who still suffers, will those of you who care to join us join Ryan in the Serenity Prayer?
God, grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference today.
Thank you all for coming.
Thank you.
Is a moment of silence or like a
half an hour?
Oh,
it's
yeah.
It's a crowd, isn't it?
Come on.
It's a crowd.
Moment of silence. You have to...